Welcome to Ballistic Radio. Join us as we discuss hard-won self-defense lessons, as well as the information you need to survive a violent encounter. Listen as armed professionals, industry experts, national champions, and gunfight survivors help answer all your firearms and self-defense questions while exploring your rights and responsibilities as an armed citizen. Ballistic Radio, brought to you by Daniel Defense, the country's leading manufacturer of AR rifles and accessories. Daniel Defense, lighter, stronger, better. And now, here is your host, John Johnston.
Welcome to Ballistic Radio, brought to you by Daniel Defense, the country's leading manufacturer of AR rifles and accessories. Daniel Defense, lighter, stronger, better. I'm your host, John Johnston. Remember, you can always listen to past shows at ballisticradio.com, and I hate you so much. And get the latest behind-the-scenes info, photos, arguments, videos, other stuff at facebook.com/ballisticradio. Co-hosting with me, Code Red, Melody Lauer.
So now you need to put that in context because you just said, I hate you so much. And that sounds like you're telling your fans that you hate them.
No. I mean, some of them, but most of them I love.
Okay.
The ones that send me like mean, hurtful comments after I have Paul Sharp on the show.
Aw. Were your feelings hurt?
Well, I mean, I love Paul. It's okay that I express love for Paul on
the show. It is. It's fantastic. Don't get me started on that.
No. Anyway. Hey, guess what?
What?
Christ. This segment brought to you by Lucky Gunner and Federal Premium Ammunition. Whether there was a firefight or you do, in fact, want to worry about that little guy, you need more ammo. And when it's time to restock, you can't beat Federal Premium Ammunition and LuckyGunner.com. With a shipping department that's always moving at 88 miles per hour, if I order a case of American Eagle from Lucky Gunner on a Thursday, it's at my doorstep ready to shoot before the weekend starts. Head to LuckyGunner.com today to check out their in-stock lineup of Federal Premium Ammunition. And remember, unless you're on fire or drowning, you can never have too much ammo. So, joining us, and I can't even begin to imagine how hard she's laughing, Annette Evans.
Hi.
Wow, both of you.
I like Annette. Annette and I are friends.
We're all very good friends, yes. So joining us, Annette Evans. Annette, who are you? What do you do? And then we'll get into today's topic.
Hi, everyone. I'm Annette Evans. I'm also known as the beauty behind the blast. I shoot lots of pistols, and I am starting up a range right outside of Philadelphia called Race Street Range.
Nice. Former team member for a large manufacturer. USPSA shooter, right?
Yep.
So
mostly.
So I guess what I want to talk about today is, and I said red dots before the show, but maybe I'll change it up. Ooh, would that be mean? That'd be mean.
Why would that be mean?
I don't know. Just put her on the spot.
Putting me on the spot anyway.
That's true. I did like send you a Facebook message, be like, hey, by the way, I'm interviewing you today at 12. You're like, what? And that was like presumptuous in so many ways. And yeah, anyway, I guess first off, what are your thoughts on red dots on pistols, slide mounted red dots? So I guess for USPSA, that'd be what, concealed carry optics? Is that the division that they made for them or?
Carry optics is slide mounted red dots, although there's a few people running them in open division as well.
Huh. Seems like a weird place to run them, but okay.
If your gun shoots flat enough, I guess that works for you.
I guess.
I don't know. I don't shoot open.
Yeah, no, open's weird. So what is carry optics and why the sudden interest in that in competition, do you think?
So carry optics is basically production division with a slide-mounted red dot stacked on top. There's not really a whole lot of differences between the divisions beyond that and the fact that you can have big magazines and load them up in carry optics, unlike production where you can only run 10 rounds in a mag.
Right.
I think people like it because it's something new, different. It's fairly cheap to get into. So, you know, open, you're looking at $2,000-$4,000 for the gun and $100 a mag.
Mm-hmm.
Carry optics, I think I can get into a 320 RX for about $700-$800 right now.
Yeah.
And use the mags I already have for my 320.
Right.
And you get to go fast with the dot and you get to shoot a lot of rounds before you have to reload. And everybody knows that all we do in USPSA is spray and pray anyway.
Well, you know, I have heard that. It was Jesus. Melody's like, now she's putting her coat on.
It's chilly in here. I'm putting my coat on.
My God. Apparently, two is our limit. Once we get to the third show of the day, we're no longer serious or professional. Do you think a lot of people seem to confuse the accuracy requirement of doing well at USPSA, don't you think? Since you made the spray and pray joke.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I shoot minor both in production and carry optics apparently now. And points matter a lot. So, you know, USPSA's motto is DVC, and it basically comes down to you have to be accurate and fast. Mm-hmm. You can't trade off one for the other if you want to do well. I mean, the best shooters in the world right now in shooting minor are dropping, you know, maybe 5% of points available for the match.
Right. So do you think the red dot helps or doesn't help with that, or does it just depend?
It depends. Come on, you know that's going to be my answer. I'm a lawyer.
Well, yeah, I know. Well, yes, but expound upon that. Pretend that I don't want to talk. I mean, pretend you don't know me and you assume that I just want people to hear what you think here. So expand, elucidate.
Unpack that statement?
Yes.
So I think that the red dot is easier in some ways because you don't have to line up those three little bumps on top of your gun. You just literally put the dot on the target and press the trigger. And if your gun is zeroed and your trigger press is good, that's where the bullet's going to land.
Right.
So it's easier, especially for long distance targets, for tight targets, if you're not really careful with your irons. But people get really, really caught up in, I need the perfect sight picture on a dot. I need that perfect dot exactly where I want to hit the bullet, that bullet to hit. And, you know, it's not okay for me to have a close A because I have this dot. Like, why should I allow there to be a little bit of flop?
Right.
That slows people down a lot, especially on close range stuff. Even on further stuff, you know, just because it's at 15 yards doesn't mean you have to have that dot right in the center of the A perf. You know, the little A perforation in the middle of the A zone.
So what do you think the and I'm totally not sending gifts to my co-host on Facebook Messenger right now just to try and mess with her because that'd be wrong. So where do you think that confusion lies for people? Like that they have to have the perfect sight picture. As Scott Jedlinski would say, they're expecting the dot to like look back at them, tell them they're a good person, and, hey, bro, it's okay to press the trigger right now.
I think it's because it's too easy, because there is a dot. Because, you know, most of us don't think that hard about getting the irons lined up perfectly, about having the perfect equal height, equal light, exactly what we want, exactly where we want, because we know instinctively that that's kind of hard to do when it's fast.
Right.
I mean, whether or not that's true is kind of a different conversation, but most of us are pretty comfortable with a little bit of flop in our irons. But the dot is so precise. So it really tempts you into thinking, as Scott says, tempts you into thinking, hey, I'm going to tell you exactly what you need to know, exactly what perfection is going to look like.
So how do you get yourself out of that, do you think?
Same way you do with irons. So a lot of people are
unpack that
on
statement,
irons
Annette.
Trying to get. I'm working on it. A lot of people are slow on irons because they're looking for that perfection, even though we know that it's really, really hard to do and it's easier to let go of it. So I think that you need to kind of do the same thing with a dot that you do with irons. Things like shooting your irons when they aren't – shooting your dot when it's not perfectly centered in the window.
Right.
And seeing where that lands your round at different distances and things like that. Mm-hmm. Seeing how fast you can go. Seeing if you can look for your dot after – you fired the shot and see where it lifts from rather than where it's landing into before you fire your shot.
That makes sense. Let's pause here because we have to go to break. We've already eaten up the first segment, but we're talking with Annette Evans and you're listening to Ballistic Radio. Welcome back to Ballistic Radio, brought to you by Daniel Defense, the country's leading manufacturer of AR rifles and accessories. Daniel Defense, lighter, stronger, better. This segment brought to you by Wilson Combat. Wilson Combat, makers of the finest custom 1911s and scatter guns since 1977. A legacy of quality, innovation, and service. Learn more about their firearms and accessories, as well as the new EDC X9, which offers discriminating shooters 1911 match-grade accuracy, superior ergonomics, and concealability with modern service pistol capacity and reliability at www.wilsoncombat.com. So we're talking with Annette Evans, and you were saying something about, like, what, dry fire? Kind of, maybe? I think you were getting there.
Dry fire, me?
No, never.
Why would you think I would talk about dry fire?
I don't know. I mean, man, I was going to make a joke, and you were going to curse at me on air.
We're just going to move on now. It's not like she doesn't teach classes on dry fire or anything. And go.
No, I was actually going to be like, you know, for a gun bunny, you post a lot of videos of you actually working pretty hard at this. But, ooh, see, that sound right there is the premeditation so that when I get shot in the back of the head next time Annette and I are in the same spot, you'll know exactly why it happened. It was this moment right here. Please play this at the trial. Anyway, dry fire.
Innocent.
Yep. Dry fire. Talk about dry fire.
Dry fire. Yes. Dry fire is, you know, probably the easiest, cheapest way to build a lot of skill fairly quickly.
Okay.
You know, it's something that I've been doing more or less every day, at least 2, 3, 4 times a week for the last, I don't know, 3, 4 years. I should probably be a lot better than I am.
I should be a lot better than I am, too, so don't feel bad.
But, you know, it's taken me from somebody who is a fairly mediocre, you know, as a C shooter, kind of struggling to get to 50% in USPSA, and made B inside of a year or so after I started dry firing.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm a big believer in it. I think that, you know, for somebody like me who can't get to the range a whole lot, at least until Race Street's up and running, it's the only way I can actually learn a lot of the stuff that I'm doing and get in practice.
So as far as, like, if you're gonna start working on, like, that stuff, how would you dry fire that?
Yeah. I mean, I actually just went back to Carry Optics this week. I spent a lot of last winter dry firing with the DOT. Going back to it right now, mostly because I have to shoot a monster match soon, and I don't like shooting 60-round stages in production.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of strange like that. But it's not very different from dry firing irons. You're doing the same thing, right? You're drawing, you're transitioning, you're reloading, you're doing whatever you do in dry fire, but you're looking for something that's a little bit different. Instead of looking for your irons on the target, you need to see where that DOT is going to show up. And I think the DOT is actually really excellent because it's so much less forgiving than irons.
Mm. Is the DOT less forgiving, or is it just more highlighting of mistakes? You know what I mean?
I think it's less forgiving because when your irons are misaligned, it's pretty easy to figure out what you need to do to fix it, right? You know, if my front sight's high, I can see my front sight, I can see my rear sight, and I know what I need to do. I need to move the muzzle of my gun down. If I don't see the DOT in the window, unless I have a really good feel for how my hands are on the gun and what I'm doing, I don't know what I need to do to fix that and to get the DOT into the window so I can see it.
Yeah. And the other thing, too, is if the DOT's out of the window entirely, you're off by a lot, right?
Yep. A lot.
I think Carl Wren did the math, or it's something like 65 MOA off. If you can't see the DOT, you're 65 MOA off. I'd have to pull my notes up from that presentation. I don't have them right here, but which equates to a lot on paper. But anyway, so other than that, the DOT being less forgiving, anything else?
I think that's really most of it. I mean, so when I shoot a DOT, I just slap a optic slide on top of my regular gun.
Yeah.
So everything else is exactly alike except for a little bit of weight difference.
Yeah.
You know, the grip is the same, the trigger is the same. You know, I'm have a 20-round mag in instead of a 10-round mag in.
Right.
And I don't have my tungsten guide rod in. But that's really about it. So it all comes down to vision. That's the only thing that really changes for me.
Yeah. Well, so what changes then? If the vision is what changes about that?
It's a lot easier and faster to see the sight, so the dot instead of sight. So it's easier to read what I'm doing. Now, I've said it's less forgiving, and that's true, but when it is there, you can see, I think with a little bit more precision than most of us can do with our shot calling, exactly where you're landing.
Yeah. And for me personally, what I can really see is when I start to drag that dot down low to the left, and I'm just like, I shouldn't be doing that. I guess I'll press the trigger. Oh, I missed. So here, let's transition, which is something I can't do on paper targets, and talk about.
There's dry fire for that.
Yeah, we could. So we're doing this series of videos for Lucky Gunner. If you guys have not checked them out, you should do so. They're on Lucky Gunner's YouTube channel. But anyway, we're doing this series of videos for him where we highlight certain drills and stuff like that. And the last time we were down there, one of the ones that we highlighted was the El Prez, which is not something I work on, right? And it was bad. It was really bad. And the other thing that we're doing for this series, too, is whatever we do the first take is whatever we do the first take, which up until that point had been pretty okay for me. All of a sudden was not. But it's funny how stuff you don't practice is hard. Yeah?
Mm-hmm.
So
if you practice a lot, it kind of helps.
Yeah, a little bit. So anyway, transitioning. Now that I've told a horrible joke that wasn't funny, what's the difference between like the gun you shoot in competition and your carry gun? Why are there differences there, or are there differences there? I mean, I thought Melody, did you have something you wanted to add in this? I'm pretty sure I'm asking your topic of conversation here that you were going to discuss. Did I already do it?
We were talking, you had an interview recently where you were talking about your carry gear and your carry setup versus your, you know, what you run for competition. And I found it to be really interesting how, I guess the question that I have is, why do you have different, I guess, competition gear and carry gear? And then how do you see, and this is kind of a two-part question, I know, and how do you train for the difference? And what do you see as a higher level competitor and someone who takes self-defense very seriously? How do you train and see the biggest differences in the training between the two?
So up until this spring, I actually carried the subcompact version of my competition gun. So it was, the grip was more or less the same. The gun ran the same. It felt the same. It was a shorter grip. The sights were different and not a whole lot else. And I did that because I wasn't really confident in my skill transference between different guns and because it was convenient. You know, like I have a 320 here, I have a 320 there. And then this spring, I switched to a Glock 19 for a number of reasons, and I discovered maybe last winter, that I'm not losing that much skill going between guns, especially if I get some time on the different guns that I'm working with. So last winter, I went and decided I wanted to shoot a 226 for a while instead of my 320, and I was losing maybe 5%. On my performance. And I had objective data about that because I was shooting matches, so I could see where my performance was. And then when I decided to switch to the Glock, it was kind of the same thing. It's, you know, from a shooting perspective, I'm not losing a whole lot there because I shoot guns a lot. You know, at the end of the day, I'm pointing sights at a target and pressing a trigger. There's not a whole lot of difference.
Well, and probably yeah, hold that thought because we got to go to break. So right now we're talking with Annette Evans. You're listening to Ballistic Radio. Welcome back to Ballistic Radio, brought to you by Daniel Defense, the country's leading manufacturer of AR rifles and accessories. Daniel Defense, lighter, stronger, better. This segment brought to you by Surefire. No, your target and what is beyond it. But how can you really know your target? By shining a really bright light at it. And that's where Surefire comes in. From the new 1200 lumen EDCL 2T handheld, or 500 lumen EDCL 1T handheld, to the 1000 lumen XH35 or 300 lumen XT1B, Surefire can make sure you never have to yell, "Aziz, light!" ever again. Now, with more lumens and improved switching, the best just got brighter. Surefire. So, also, as a special offer to Ballistic Radio listeners, you can get 30% off everything at the Surefire.com web store, except batteries and suppressors, by entering the discount code ALLTHELUMENS, that is ALLTHELUMENS, at Surefire.com. So, we're talking with Annette Evans about her crushing fear of not knowing how to shoot a gun that was different from her other gun and how she overcame that, or something like that. But I mean, seriously, it's funny, and I've been the same way before, where like I'll get it in my head that, oh man, I need this thing that I've been practicing with. And yeah, I'm better than I would be, with a gun that I've never picked up before, but it's not as huge of a difference as we like to make it seem like it is, do you think? Or does it depend?
I think that that's true at certain levels of shooting. Okay. I think when you're a new shooter, every gun is really hard to shoot well.
Yeah. Okay.
You're just learning how to shoot. I think that as you progress, there's going to be a period of time and skill level where you're going to shoot your gun really, really well, and you're probably not going to shoot anything else terribly well. Mm-hmm. You're going to lose a lot. And then as you get better and, you know, where that line is, I think that's going to be different for different people and their training and everything else, then it's going to get to a point where you can shoot pretty much everything approximately as well as anything else, more or less. You're obviously going to do better on your gun, but if you go to another gun, you're not going to lose a whole lot. And then as you move beyond that, you're going to get to a point where there is one gun that you've got where you can squeeze every bit of performance out of. But even then, you can probably shoot anything else acceptably well.
Well, and what do you think it takes to get to that?
Dry fire? dry fire, rounds down range. I think you got to know guns. You know, you got to know how to run your gun mechanically and know how to run other guns mechanically. You got to put rounds down range.
So, I guess, you mean you have to work hard to get better? I don't know, Annette. That sounds like it might.
Well, I like what you said about knowing guns. I think that's a really, really important part, because the first class that I ever took, one of the things that really stuck with me was, we want to teach you the fundamentals so that you can pick up any gun and run it to an okay level. And the way that you can do that is by knowing guns, really, and then being able, you're never going to be, you know, like you said, you're never going to be as good as you are with that gun that you've worked so hard with. But do you agree that once you've got those fundamentals, you can almost pick up anything and at least run it to a reasonable standard, right?
I think so. I mean, I'm not a revolver shooter at all. Not even a little bit. I hate those things. But I know how to run one. You know, I know how to get a cylinder open. I know how to put rounds into the cylinder. I know, you know, and that is a basic skill that I have to have before I can run a gun reliably. And once I've figured that out, maybe I'm really slow on the reloads and everything else, and maybe that double action trigger is going to, you know, really kill me and kill my times. I'll definitely die in the streets with one. But I can shoot it to an acceptable level because I've learned how to run that gun and I know the basics of putting my sights on target and running the trigger.
Mm-hmm.
So, do you think that people are oftentimes looking for stuff they can buy that will fast forward them past all the hard work that you actually have to do to be decent at this?
I don't know that there's anybody who isn't looking for some kind of shortcut.
Well, I know some people that are very like masochistic about it. Like, I shoot iron sights on my M1 Garand because if it was good enough for my grandfather in World War II, it's good enough for right now. you know?
That's what I did when I qualified for the Marine Corps. That's what I got.
Irons, yeah.
Yeah.
On rifles.
Okay, there are a few people, but I think that most people who are chasing performance want to find the magic haha bullet.
Right. I saw what you did there, by the way.
What's that?
I saw what you did there, by the way. The
yeah.
It was very punny. Please continue.
Yes. Well, it's better than cursing, apparently.
Yes. Yes, it is.
So, wow, I totally lost my train of thought there.
Yeah, I do that.
You're talking about magic bullets.
I think people want to, yeah, magic bullets. I think that people want to buy gear that makes them better. And to a point, you can find gear that masks your mistakes.
Mm-hmm.
The question is whether or not you will be able to move on from that gear later on. And maybe you don't have to, and maybe it doesn't matter. But I think for a lot of us, especially in the defensive world, it matters a lot to be able to run not just your gun.
Yeah. It's so. Let me ask you this then: when do you make the decision to go? Okay, I'm doing pretty all right. Now I'm going to try something new. You know what I mean? Like, okay, I'm doing well with my gun, so now I'm going to pick up something new. When do you get there? What gets you there?
For me, there's two reasons I might switch up normally. One of them is I'm looking to see what I can learn by switching things up. You know, maybe when I was shooting DASA last winter, it was because I wanted to learn how to run a DASA trigger and see how that would improve my trigger management on a striker gun. Mm-hmm. And sometimes, you know, just boredom.
Yeah.
One of the best ways to get yourself burned out is to get bored with what you're doing. And if you can find something new and exciting, then maybe that's what you need to do to keep progressing.
Well, and that's oftentimes overlooked. At the end of the day, isn't this supposed to still be fun?
Theoretically? I'm told.
When do you think people start losing sight of that?
I think when you're, you know, in the competition world, you're chasing those trophies so hard that all that matters is winning. And winning's fun. I mean, don't get me wrong. I like winning. But if that's all there is, then how are you going to enjoy the cool stages, enjoy your friends, and all that?
Yeah.
You know, when all you care about is high score. And I think in the defensive world, sometimes we get a little bit too caught up in, you know, tilt in the streets.
Yeah.
No, that's going to get you killed. Well, you know, there's a lot of, hopefully, a lot of time between now and when I'm going to get killed in the streets, and I'd like to enjoy that.
That might be the quote.
That might have to be the quote.
So, for those that don't know, when you say kilt in the streets, what are you talking about?
It's sort of this idea that if you're not doing it right, and I'm saying that, you know, all capitalized, doing it right, that you're going to die, literally, because you're not carrying enough gun, you're not carrying enough gear, you're not paying enough attention to the world around you. You're going to die because you are not the perfect paragon of everyday carry.
And that completely loses sight of the fact that most of the people that we're going against are just horrible. Not that we want to plan for them being horrible, but the reality is, most of the times they are. A lot of the times they are. We got about a minute left in this segment. So do you think that since you're carrying a Glock 19, I'd like a quick answer and then we'll get more in depth. Do you think you're ever going to start competing with a Glock? Like a G34 maybe?
Probably not. I have a lot of support on the SIG platform, a lot of time behind that platform. So it's unlikely that I'll make a full change unless I really discover that there's things that I can do with a Glock that I can't do with my 320.
Mm. I was going to say something like drop it, but that would probably be too soon. Anyway,
we
got to go to break. Right now we're talking with Annette Evans. You're listening to Ballistic Radio. Welcome back to Ballistic Radio, brought to you by Daniel Vents, country's leading manufacturer of AR rifles and accessories. Daniel Vents, lighter, stronger, better. So we're talking with Annette Evans, and I'm making jokes that aren't actually funny, but really kind of are. And we're talking about red dots and improvement and stuff like that. So what are you interested in right now as far as shooting? What are you wanting to work on?
I am working very much on shooting proactively.
What do you mean by that?
You know, when you jump off a, well, I don't know. You jump off a cliff, you jump out of a plane, and you know that you're going to land safely.
You've never skydived before, have you?
You're pretty sure you're going to land right.
Your thinking mine is, yes.
Yes. Yeah, in general. So when you shoot proactively, you have to have faith in your skills and your ability and what you're seeing before you have a chance to consciously be aware of what you're doing and what you're seeing.
That's really interesting that you say that, because we just had Ben Steger on the show, and he was talking about mindset and, like, his mindset at matches. And he's like, dude, when I'm at a match, I'm just letting the program run, and I'm just sort of watching what happens. And I'm like, huh, well, that's kind of interesting, you know? But it seems to me that a lot of people want to involve themselves more in the actual, like, involve their higher level brain function than needs to be involved. Does that kind of make sense?
Absolutely. We want to make sure our sights are where they're going to be. We want to make sure that we're pressing the trigger like we intend to.
Where...
It takes a lot of energy, a lot of thought, and it takes a lot of time. And it tends to screw you up.
So what? How do we get around that?
This is kind of one of the areas where dry fire falls down a little bit. It's great for mechanics and things like that. But in terms of having complete and total faith that your rounds are going to land where you want them to land, that's something you got to go out and shoot a whole bunch.
Yeah, I could see that. So... as far as shooting proactively, and that's something you want to work on, how are you gonna work on that? What are you going to make yourself do that you wouldn't normally do to, like, get yourself to that point?
Some of that is being a little bit more aggressive when I go out and shoot matches, instead of, you know, being careful. You know, a local match doesn't matter if I win or I lose. It's really sort of a large practice session that I don't really get to prepare for. So practicing shooting proactively, practicing not letting myself think too hard that way in practice when I get out for my own live fire practice. The other thing I'm going to do is actually go get some training.
Yeah.
You know, I can't teach myself all this stuff, and sometimes you just need that push from somebody else. So I'm working on a really ambitious training schedule for 2018, as long as I can figure out a way to make it work.
You can donate plasma. That's how I get spare money for training.
I have a question for you then, Annette. Have you ever had an instance in this whole idea of proactive and having that confidence where you go out there to do your live fire, you're really confident, you pull the trigger, and the round is just not where you expected it to be? And what do you do then? I mean, one, have you ever had that happen? And if someone encounters that, what would you recommend that they do?
I have totally done that, and a lot, And I think that's a time when you need to be very honest with yourself on exactly what it is you were doing in your head when you were pressing that trigger. Truly subconscious shooting, truly proactive shooting, you weren't making judgments about how your sight picture looked or how your trigger press felt. You are simply doing and observing.
Go ahead.
Oh, no, I'm thinking. You go ahead.
No, you. I'm trying to get you to actually, you know, interact with guests more.
I'm interacting with Annette. So that's really interesting because, you know, having tried to do that myself, there have been times when I've done that and I've gone out there and I've been like, okay, I got this. I'm going to, you know, like you said, you know, do this and not have a judgment about it. And all of a sudden I'm like, what is happening? And there have been times when I've discovered it was an equipment issue. There have been times that I've discovered that it was a vision issue, but until I found that out, the blow to my confidence has been just devastating. And it's been a while before I could get that confidence back, even if it wasn't necessarily, quote unquote, my fault. You know what I mean?
I know exactly what you mean. It's why I shoot a 320 instead of my old competition gun.
Well, why would that make a difference?
I had completely lost faith in that gun and that platform. I had a gun that was drooping 4 to 6 inches at 25 yards, which for what I'm doing is really not very acceptable. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I was changing barrels, I was changing flies, I was shooting other people's guns on the same platform, and we just couldn't get it to work for me. And it turns out it was, you know, a generational platform issue. And I just didn't have faith. Even if I was able to fix that gun, I was never going to have faith in that gun again. Mm-hmm. So I switched. That's actually another reason to switch platforms, is I switched guns entirely. I made a completely arbitrary decision that I wanted a gun that could shoot sub 2 inches at 25 yards out of the box. Wow. And sub 4 inches at 50 yards out of the box, period. And it was arbitrary, but it was what I had needed to feel like I could know that it was always me screwing up and not the gun.
And that's interesting because, and when did you feel like you got that confidence back on the new platform? Was it immediately or did it take a little while?
It definitely took a while because I wasn't sure how much was me screwing up on that old platform. You know, everybody tells you it's always you, it's never the gun.
Mm-hmm.
And unfortunately, that's not always true.
Yeah.
So it took me a little while to understand that, you know, no, it was really the gun. And I went out and because it was an accuracy issue I was having, I went out and shot a lot of groups.
Well, and there you go. Hey, we're coming up on the end of the show. If people want to, like, find out more about you or train with you or sign up for what is going to become the premier training facility on the East Coast, how would they do that?
Well, that's kind of you to say.
I thought so.
The range's website is www.racestreetrange.com, race as in like the race car.
Yep.
And you can find more about me at facebook.com/blastingbeauty.
Nice, nice. Well, thank you so much for taking time out of your day last minute.
Stop laughing.
You
started giggling.
I'm only giggling a little, okay? If you guys can't tell, we're all actually really good friends, which is sort of good because we can talk about anything. But it's also sort of bad because we probably don't take this as seriously as we should. But anyway, thanks for coming on the show, Annette. I really appreciate it.
Thanks for asking me back.
Yep. Thank you for not cursing this time, too. Very proud of you.
I told you I could behave. I've been working on it.
Anyway, thanks, guys. Make sure you check out our website, ballisticradio.com. Like our Facebook page at facebook.com/ballisticradio. And hey, keep leaving those 5-star review on iTunes. We really appreciate it. Thanks for listening, everyone. As always, be safe. See you next week.